Are you looking for information to help your indoor environment be the safest space available for you and your family? If you are, then you've come to the right place. My name is Mike McNatt, and this is the Indoor Environmental Safe Space Podcast. Okay, we're going to spend the next few minutes talking about the different parts of a mold structure and some of their byproducts and implications of that. You know, I get questions from customers who call me up with laboratory reports, and they ask, hey, Mike, I'm seeing terms on here like hyphae or hyphal structures, hyphal fragments. I'm seeing terms like spores per cubic meter. I'm seeing different Latin names, complicated names of molds. What does all this mean? So having a basic understanding of what the physical parts of mold are can be helpful, because those are terms you're going to hear from other indoor environment professionals. You'll see them on laboratory reports, and you're definitely going to hear more about them on these podcasts here from the Indoor Environmental Safe Space. So with that in mind, let's just start from the very bottom of the mold. If we view mold as a microscopic plant, now keep in mind, I know that mold is not a plant. Mold is part of the fungal kingdom, and the plant kingdom is an entirely different kingdom. But the primary difference between the fungi and the plants is that the plants have the capability of converting sunlight into energy through a process called photosynthesis with chlorophyll. And molds do not have that ability. The fungi kingdom doesn't have that ability. So that's the primary difference. But structurally, we can look at them the same, because it's really a beneficial way to kind of get an idea of what the different parts are. So let's just imagine a little tiny baby microscopic plant, and at the bottom of the plant we have roots, and the equivalent to roots for molds are called mycelium. And the mycelium are responsible for growing into materials to absorb the nutrients so the fungus can convert it into energy and grow and reproduce and have a happy little colony. So I really want to emphasize the fact that mycelium grow into the materials that they are absorbing nutrients from. That's why a lot of times you'll hear indoor environmental professionals say that these spray it and forget it solutions are not effective. Anybody that tells you you can just spray a visible mold colony and walk away and paint over it a few days later, or just spray it and then just wipe it down and everything will be fine, that's entirely false, because if mold is growing into a porous material, those mycelium are penetrating into that material to absorb the food source. Just spraying something on the surface isn't going to get it. The mold has a high probability of regrowing, and that can be problematic. So keep in mind, the roots are the mycelium. Next, with plants, we have structures that grow upwards and outwards. We have branches and stems and whatnot. Well, molds have similar structures that we call hyphae or hyphal structures, and they are basically how the colony grows upwards and outwards to spread. Hyphal fragments is one of those terms you may see on mold reports. It depends on the lab and what level of detailed reporting they do, but keep in mind that anytime you see hyphal fragments, they're talking about little fragments of the limbs, the branches, the stems, etc. Finally, at the end of certain hyphal structures, the mold will produce fruiting bodies, and those fruiting bodies produce spores. So the spores are to the mold as seeds are to a plant. They are little genetic life rafts, if you will, that the mold casts off into the environment in hopes that that spore will land in a space that has adequate food and water and all the things that mold needs in order to grow a happy new colony. There you have it. You've got the mycelium at the bottom of the plant, which is equivalent to the roots. You've got the hyphae or the hyphal structures, which are equivalent to the branches, the limbs, the stems, whatever you want to call them, growing upwards and outwards. And then at the very top, you have the spores, which are equivalent to seeds that the mold casts off into the environment as a way of reproducing. Lastly, I want to talk about one final physical component, and this, in my opinion, is the most harmful, highest risk physical aspect of mold. We talked about the mycelium, we talked about the hyphal structures, we talked about the spores. All of these are part of the physical structure of mold, but just like everything that lives, mold eventually runs the course of its life and it dies, and all things that die must decompose back into their natural elements, back into the nutrients, back into the soil, so that new plants and new life can grow and absorb those nutrients as food. Mold does the exact same thing. A single mold colony can shed thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of little microscopic fragments as it starts to decompose and it starts to flake away. This is a good way to look at it. The average adult human sheds about a gram and a half of epithelial tissue a day. Dead skin cells, always falling off of us. About a gram and a half of them each and every single day. That's about the size of a sugar cube. If you swept it all up, it would make a visible little pile. And you could probably compress it into a little square, and that square would be about the size of a sugar cube. Well, just like humans, mold also sheds. Research demonstrated that mold sheds anywhere from 340 to in the thousands of submicronic particles, meaning particles smaller than 1 micron, for every visible mold spore on a mold test. So if you hire a mold assessment consultant to come out and take an air sample, and they tell you, well, based on my analysis and my air spore trap, you've got 20 mold spores per cubic meter of this particular mold. Realize 20 times 340 submicronic particles flaked off of that same mold colony, that if the mold has produced a mycotoxin, those submicronic particles are the primary transport mechanism for that mycotoxin. Also, those submicronic particles can be very allergenic. The submicronic particles are especially dangerous because A, they're highly respirable, meaning they can go way deep down into the lungs when we inhale, much further than larger particles, because the larger particles get caught up in the hairs and the mucus and our defense mechanisms. They can go way deep into the lungs, and some of them can get so tiny that they can actually transverse that membrane between the alveoli of the lungs and enter into our bloodstream. You know, you think about a mold particle going directly into your blood, especially if that mold has produced a mycotoxin, that can be extremely problematic for people who suffer from mold exposure issues. So it's a bad thing. Let me just wrap it up that way. So whenever mold remediation is being performed, they need to consider getting rid of the physical parts of mold, the spores, the hyphal fragments, the mycelium. They need to get rid of the byproducts of mold, the microbial volatile organic compounds, and the mycotoxins. And finally, they need to get rid of this submicronic level of dust that are typically 0.3 microns and below, if not even smaller. We're talking super tiny little particles. And because they're so small, they can stay adrift in the air indefinitely, waiting for you to inhale them. Well, that concludes our podcast for today. If you found the information helpful, please support our podcast by selecting like below. And to stay informed as new episodes are posted, be sure and select subscribe below. If you have any questions or comments, be sure and post them below, or feel free to email us at info@iesafespace.com. Thanks for listening in. I'm Mike McNett, and this is the Indoor Environmental Safe Space Podcast.